This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even when the mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, freed from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
How's everybody doing? Good?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's good to be here, to be back for the new year. It's good to see the same faces. So that means something must be working. And it's also good to see people here for the first time. And to, you know, explore this realm of the mind that we call meditation. It's a practice that, you know, is well known. By doctors, you know, by people in society. It's a practice that can help us, you know, calm our minds down, to help us free ourselves from our stresses and to become a more peaceful and more happier person. So it's good to see people who are interested in such a practice, and And I think if you, you know, you give it some time, give it dedication, be patient with the meditation, and understand, you know, for the beginners, that is at the beginning is not a very easy thing to do, because you have a lot of challenging things that may come up in your mind, you know, the stresses, thoughts about work, and just basically your mind, which moves around a lot. You know, we call it, in Buddhism, we call it the monkey mind, a mind that cannot sit still. It's sort of like a monkey, you know, it cannot sit still. It's always jumping from branch, you know, to branch, grabbing at the banana or pulling at the branches or teasing one another. It's never still, it's never settled. You know, the monkey's always moving around. And that's like us, you know, when we first come into the meditation practice. And at times it's very hard to, you know, tame this monkey mind. And I would like to I like to say, like, what happens if you have the monkey mind and you can't stop it? You end up going bananas. Anyways, so that's.
That sounds like an Ajahn Brahm story.
Huh?
Sounds like an AB story.
That's an original Santuti story. Well, anyway, the secret to calming down this monkey mind is to, you know, practice the meditation. And that's what we're here for, is to just find a quiet place to be able to just allow our minds to calm down. And it's very good to come to a place like this where there's a lot of people with the same outlook who want to learn how to meditate, because that creates a, you know, a nice energy within the room, and that energy encourages one another to give this meditation a go. And initially, for the beginners, or even for people who've done it for a long time, one of the problems is that we have this wanting mind, you know, this mind that craves. And coming to the meditation practice, we have this idea to make our minds quiet, to make our minds peaceful, to make it silent. And when we sit down for the first time, or, you know, after a few years, maybe longer, we close our eyes and we see what's happening within ourselves. And we see that our mind is, you know, restless, or it may be tired, or it may be thinking about something, or thinking about the future. And because we are craving for a peaceful and quiet mind, you can see that causing like a discontent, or like a dislike, or, you know, an irritation towards this meditation practice. So in a sense, when we start out to learn how to meditate, or if we've been meditating for a long time, is to develop this this like idea of patience. You know, patience is a word which is used where you know, where you find yourself in a situation where you don't, there's nothing for you to do. You know, you got yourself in a corner, and there's nowhere to go. There's no escape. There's no solution. So the only thing you can really do is just to be patient. In some situations, you can solve the problem. But in situations, as you would know, in your lives, you may come across hard times, and there's really, you can't really do much about it. I mean, you can go see a doctor or talk to a friend, but the problem seems to still be there. So really, the only thing you can do is to be patient. As the saying goes, you know, all time heals all wounds. And in a sense, that's a great, you know, asset to have in this meditation practice, is just to be patient. And to lower your expectations. If you want to have, like a sense of contentment and a sense of ease within your meditation practice, is what you can do is you just lower your expectations. You know, do not expect your mind to be like peaceful and still the first time you sit. Otherwise, you're going to get disappointed, and that disappointment is like a negativity or a sense of I cannot do this, a sense of I'm hopeless, and this will never work for me. And, you know, if you have that kind of feeling and thought and idea towards the meditation, then there's no chance and no hope for it to grow and to become still and to become useful and helpful in your lives. So, you know, lowering your expectations, that helps, and giving the meditation a chance, and just being mindful enough to see the stillness and quietness that arises within one's mind when one's sitting here, you know, quietly for about half an hour. Because, you know, this mind, even though it may be a monkey mind, you know, the monkeys, sometimes, you know, they have to sleep. They have to rest. It's just the nature of the monkey. And in the same way, this mind, even though it may be a monkey mind, from time to time, this mind will just have to rest. You know, it will just have to, you know, take a break. And just use your, you know, your mindfulness or your intellect to see, you know, that state of mind, and understand that you know, a mind which is quiet, a mind which is rested, or a mind which is calm, is a lot better than a mind which is turbulent, a mind which is moving. And this is the wonderful thing about this path of meditation. Is you may come here and you hear different teachings from different teachers. You have Ajahn Brahm coming here, Ajahn Api, and all sorts of teachers. They give you all sorts of different ways to meditate, different angles to look at it. But at the heart of it, it's basically our own, you know, our own experience, looking within and seeing for ourselves and figuring it out for ourselves how to make this mind, you know, calm and peaceful, and seeing the benefits that come from it. I remember a long, long time ago, I think 5 years ago, oh no, longer than that. I must be getting old and losing my memory. A long time ago, this German backpacker, he came to the monastery, you know, interested in Buddhism, so he stayed there for a couple of weeks. I was up in the workshop, messing around with a few tools, fixing something, I think. And he was there, and we had a little bit of a chat, and we were just talking about meditation, and he was just talking about how he was a beginner, and that, you know, he found it really difficult to make his mind quiet, to make his mind peaceful. But he said that didn't really matter, because at the end of the meditation, he just felt better, you know, just being able to give himself a break from the world for half an hour. You don't need to get deep meditation, you don't need to meditate like the Buddha, but the thing that was beneficial for him was that he was able to take that time out to just have a break from the world that we live in. You know, the busyness, the doingness, you know, we're always doing something, right? From when we're young to when we get old, we're always doing something. We're either on our phones, or we're talking to our friends, or we're going shopping. You know, we're big doers. We don't know how to, you know, sit still and just be quiet. And that's the, and that's what, you know, monks do. You know, we're professional bludgers. We just sit around and we do nothing. We close our eyes. And we, you know, we're not demanding, we don't have a demanding attitude towards our mind. And that's, sometimes we're demanding on ourselves, you know, we have to be a good person. We have to have a quiet mind. Why doesn't my mind shut up? But instead we have an attitude of like kindness, like a softness, and, you know, a sense of patience. Being able to look at our own minds with, you know, a nice attitude. An attitude of non-fault finding, you know, just being able to just sit down and accept our minds for what it is, and to not fault find. And that's one of the things, this fault finding, you can see in your daily lives, it creates a lot of conflicts with one another, you know, with your husbands, with your wives, at work. You know, if you don't like something, you just look at them and find their faults. And you know, what kind of feeling does that leave in yourself? You know, does it feel good? And just imagine, you know, if you fault find with other people, how does that make you feel? It makes you feel, you know, people feel good about it. Like they get worked up. Oh yeah, this person's like this and this person's like that. He's no good. Yeah, there's some sort of an excitement about it. It may feel good, but if you look at it closely, it doesn't. And imagine if the person that you're fault finding finds out that you're talking about them. How would he feel? He would feel terrible. And this is what is actually happening when we're meditating and we're finding fault with our own minds. Yes, we're looking at our minds and it's restless. Oh, you're bad mind, you're restless. We're looking at our minds. This is, you probably experienced this, you know, you beginners, and it's sleepy. And you look at our minds and, oh, sleepy mind, bad mind. And you're abusing your poor mind. How would your mind feel? It would feel shattered. It wouldn't want to be in your company. It would want a divorce from you. So what do? You be a good husband to your mind. Or be a good wife. And just treat your mind with respect. And treat her with care, because as a Buddhist monk, we understand that this mind is a source of happiness by itself, without any external needs to make it happy. You know, as a monk, you just need the essentials. You need food, roof over your head, you need good company, something to do in the monastery. But for the most part, you spend most of the time just being with your mind and just working with it. And just over the years, you start to understand that a lot of the happiness that you want and seek and look for in this life is just within your mind, is right here, right now. And a lot of it is just has to do with the you know, the feelings that you can generate within your own heart, the way you look at life. So also, you know, a part of this meditation for people, you know, for the beginners and people who have been doing it for a long time, is to try to generate that, you know, the feelings of positivity. You know, like we chanted the Metta Sutta earlier on, and it's all about, you know, good things. You know, how a mother protects her child, you know, spreading loving kindness around the world, having no discrimination against people, you know, whether they are tall, short, or whatever, black, white, green, fat, skinny, and brown, Chinese, Australian, who cares? And just have this unconditional acceptance or unconditional kindness, this great attitude that brings a smile to your own face and to other people's faces. And if you can, you know, if you can just, you know, generate that, it feels good, you know, you feel great, and you sort of say to yourself, where does it come from? You ask yourself, where does it come from? Doesn't come from a credit card. Doesn't come from the latest app. From, you know, iTunes or whatever. It doesn't come from a best friend. You know, where does this happiness, you know, this kindness, this good attitude, where does it actually come from? And how can you generate it? You look closely. And this is the beautiful thing about this path, is looking within to find out the answers for yourself. That's the one thing I like about this path. It's trusting your own, you know, instincts, your own heart, and just find out what makes you happy, like internally, starting from you know, yourself, and with the meditation practice, and you can understand that you don't need things of the world to generate the happinesses. Yeah, you know, they're there. You know, you can enjoy them, you know, but at the end of the day, You know, when you go to bed, you're by yourself, and how do you feel then? Do you feel good? No. Do you feel happy? Are you content? So this, you know, this, you know, this practice of meditation, it's not only being able to sit down for like half an hour or for like 30 minutes, but it's what you do during the day, your attitude towards life, how you live life, you know, how you treat one another, and just bringing up those positive emotions and taking them, you know, into your meditation practice. As a meditator, you understand that how you live your life during the day, that's what you take into your meditation practice. If you're an anxious person, when you meditate, you have anxiety in your meditation. Or if you're an angry person, when you meditate, you bring that into your meditation practice. So in a sense, you have to work with both worlds, the world of the five senses and the world of the mind, when it comes to meditating. So you be good when you live your life, and you be good in your meditation practice, and just work towards that and see where that takes you, and be patient, you know. Be patient. I've been doing this for 13 years and I still get my bad days quite often. No, not too often, but I still get my bad days, you know. It's like, you're not perfect, but you're working with your mind and understanding that these things don't last forever. They come and they go, they disappear. And that's in the same way when you're meditating, you're coming across a roadblock, you may be caught on some sort of thought. You know, our thoughts have certain like strengths behind it. It's like, you know, some thoughts are like, you can call it like, it's on the, you know, if it's like the strength of the thought, it's like maybe one or two, you can just like let it go, forget about it, just throw it away. But sometimes you get these thoughts, they're like four or five, and when you're meditating, oh yeah, you start thinking about them. because there are four or five in strength. For some reason, the more you think about them, they get stronger. And then they become a seven or eight, and then a nine or a ten. And that's when you've known that you've lost the plot. You can't get out of it. The thoughts are just so strong. But don't lose hope. Understand that all things don't last forever. If you're patient enough, just, you know, sit there. And it should disappear. But my advice for beginners, if you're having a tough time and you're meditating, and you have some sort of problem, you're angry at somebody, or you're craving for something, or I don't know what happens to people who live out in the world. I haven't been out there in such a long time. But anyways, if that happens, my suggestion is to maybe just open your eyes. You know, just do something like coarse, in a sense, coarse, like, you're meditating and it's just getting too hard for you in the next half an hour. It's getting too hard and, you know, you can't bear whatever's happening in your mind. So do something different. Do something coarse and just open your eyes. And you find that just opening your eyes or maybe just stretching your hands, that sort of takes your mind away from your problems for that little second. And the mind is able to calm down. And once it sort of like centers itself, close your eyes again and just meditate, because this is not a path of torture. Like I remember one of the best teachings Ajahn Brahm gave me as a novice many years ago. There was a Saturday night. He teaches the suttas, which are the teachings of the Buddha, and the word of the Buddha as well. And one of the passages he said is, this is a path. This is like direct translation from the Buddha. This is a path of no groaning. No groaning. As in groaning in pain. Groaning in suffering. And when I heard that, I went, wow. That's great. You don't have to put yourself through so much suffering to achieve a peaceful state of mind. And that's a beautiful teaching, I think. You can see it in many different ways. And one of the ways that I saw it is that if you're going through a really tough time in your meditation practice, some teachers tell you to push through it, you know, grit your teeth and fight. Be a tough guy. Yeah. But you don't have to do that. You just stop meditating, have a break. It's sort of like hitting the circuit breaker. Go for a walk and then come back. Once your mind is settled, and then meditate again and develop those good states of mind, those happy states. And the thing is, you know, once your meditation is going well, if you're having a good meditation, just continue sitting. If I ring the bell and your meditation is going well, just keep your eyes closed. Ignore me. It doesn't matter. I know you're having a good time. So, yeah. Is that enough instruction? Okay. Very good. It's time for the fun stuff. All right, just get yourself into a comfy position. So, you know, meditation is like a gentle path. It's not a path that you... It's not a path with a heavy hand. So just gently and carefully and, you know, with care, just try to bring your mind into this, you know, bring your mind into this moment. You know, center yourself in this moment. A nice way to center yourself in this moment is to just bring your mind into your body. Because the body is a great reference point. Because the body is always present, is always here, is always in the now. So if you can just bring your mindfulness, bring your awareness, and just feel the presence of your body, you can understand that your mind is in the present moment. And this is where, you know, the stillness, the calm, this is where it lives in this moment. Bring your awareness, just bring your awareness to your feet. Just allow your mind to feel the sensations between your foot or your feet, between the feet and the ground. Just be present. Have a presence of mind when you're doing that. another place in the body where the sensations is quite obvious is the back area, where you're leaning against the chair, and your bum and the bottom of your thighs. Just bring your mind and rest it and feel the sensations in this area. All the while allowing the mind to be present, to be mindful. Now take your awareness and place it around your face. Just feel the coolness of the air conditioning. Just allow that to bring your mind into this moment. The cool, fresh air on your face. And as you start to relax into this moment, as you start to relax your body, you can notice that your body sort of slowly disappears from your awareness, and all you're left is just you and your mind. So this is what meditation's about. Just sitting here and becoming best friends with your mind. Spend a lot of time caring for our material world, but this is the time to start caring for your mental world. So just be in the moment, be present, and just if your mind starts to wander, just gently bring it back to the present moment, to the here and now. So just stay in this quietness, stay in the stillness. Make the present moment in your new home a place where you want to hang out. It may be scary at first, but it'll be worthwhile. That's very beneficial. Another popular object of meditation is the breath. And these objects, these techniques, just encourage or help our minds to re-center ourselves or refocus the mind in the present moment. And what you can do is you can use your breath as an object of object of meditation. It's quite simple actually. What you do is just sit down quietly and you just watch the breath go in and watch the breath go out. In, out. Doing it in a relaxing, calm, chilled manner. Because actually the more relaxed, the more calm the more chilled out you are, the more enjoyable the breath becomes. But if you're struggling with your mind, and the mind does not want to comply to your instructions, it's become a monkey mind. Remember, sometimes you can't do anything. The strength of the monkey mind is just too strong for you to, in a sense, command or control. So, what can you do? Just be patient. Just allow your mind to be. Just be patient. There's no need to fight. There's no need to fault find. But just allow the monkey mind to be the monkey mind. I'm going to ring the gong to end the meditation. But before you come out, just ask yourself, how do you feel? You know, what did you get from it? Just reflect and just think about the experience you had for the past half an hour. And hopefully, you know, you had a good one.
Are there any questions, Dave, in the box?
The lights take a long time to come along. A
couple of minutes.
Patient. Hey, you fix them. Go to Bunnings. Get some LEDs.
Not really, Dave.
So there's the new people. Do you have any questions you want to ask about meditation? Yeah?
I don't know if it's about meditation, but sometimes when I go in between sleeping and awake, my body vibrates quite rapidly, and then sometimes it'll take off, and then I panic and I come back. What's that?
Oh, I have no idea. You know, sometimes when you go to sleep and you think like you're falling?
Yeah.
You start to shake?
I used to do that a lot when I was a child.
Yeah, that's probably what is happening.
Yeah.
Like you're falling asleep and then you sort of like tell yourself to wake up and then there's a bit of a shock.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about that. That's not a big deal. It's just the body doing what the body does.
Yeah.
And just the mind reacting to it.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal. Don't need to worry about it.
Okay.
It's not dangerous or anything. Yeah. And then when that happens, you just go back to your meditation object.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's continue on. So, how was that for everybody? Maybe I should talk louder to wake you up. No. Anyways, any questions?
Ajahn, a considered question. Having been coming here now for 3 years, I suppose, you can get a reasonable idea of what it's all about. I mean, the Buddhist part of it, you know, aspirations, if you like. However, putting those into practice can be quite frustrating, or the inability to live to those aspirations. And I think that that's, that can be quite a hindrance as far as your meditation goes as well. Do you follow my drift?
Yeah, I understand where you're coming from. It's, you know, when you come across a path like this, it's a, you know, trial and error kind of thing, and you test, you know, you test it out and see whether it works or not. And then if it starts working, you build up more faith and more trust in the teachings of the Buddha or the monks who come here. And then you start to say to yourself, oh yeah, I've been doing this for a little while and it seems to be working. So you start to try other things that you can practice on this path, you know, the different aspirations that you're talking about. After a few years, if you're, you know, you might want to start to keep the five precepts, or, you know, I think a nice thing to do is to just be more helpful for the society that you live in. You know, volunteer your time, help people out. That's always a nice thing to do. And yeah, it just really depends on what type of aspirations that you're talking about. There's different parts of Buddhism to look at. There's the part of being living a more simpler life, trying to let go of more, let go of your possessions, and, you know, live simply, have a few possessions, and see what that does to your lifestyle and to your mind. The idea is that the more you have, the more trouble you have. So the idea is like the less you have, the less trouble you have. That's why monks are, you know, encouraged to live very simply and have very few possessions. Like we have a robe for all occasions. I wear this to give Dhamma talks. I wear this to eat. I wear this to funerals. I wear this to weddings. And my family says, oh, your dress sense is just so boring. Why don't you get something else?
But you don't have to spend half an hour in the morning deciding
what to wear. Oh, yeah. That's right. Putting on your makeup. What should I wear today? Or doing your hair. Yeah. Which, yeah.
Yep. I'd like to ask a question. I've been meditating for, say, a couple of years now.
Yeah.
I know it takes a while to sort of switch off.
Yeah.
I don't have trouble like switching off from thinking about other things.
Yeah.
But then I listen to a lot of talks and they say that you should concentrate on your emotions and try to work on your emotions.
Mm.
And I find that very hard to do when you're sort of not trying to think about things.
Mm.
And then some of the talks say, think about your, concentrate on your different emotions you're having at different
okay.
times.
Who said that?
Well, I've been just
Okay, yeah. Concentrating on your emotions.
Yeah,
I think
I've sort of got that.
Well, this is a part of conditioning. It's you know, you're a product of your environment. You know, how you were raised when you were younger makes you the man you are today, and. A lot, this path is also based on conditioning, just putting yourself in situations where you can develop more of a, you know, spiritual mind and more of a Buddhist mind. That's why I threw myself into a monastery, so I can get that conditioning that, you know, Ajahn Brahm would say brainwashing. And in a sense, yes, you try to, like you said, work with your emotions, but in this, you try to do that proactively, like, okay, today I'm going to sit down and work on, you know, my loving kindness, or trying to work with my anger or something like that. But yeah, that's the way of doing it. But the way how conditioning works is that over the years, the way you think, it starts to change, and in a sense, the training of the mind happens more fluidly. It's more of a instinctive, automatic kind of thing. So when you're sitting down and you're meditating, you just know that, just like in your subconscious, it's time to, you know, be more peaceful, more calm, you know, develop that joy or whatever. But yeah, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, yeah.
Probably,
I think you guys know what I mean.
I just found it a bit hard to sort of like sort of switching off and trying to think about emotions and your feelings.
Yeah, in a way we try to practice meditation as naturally as possible and just allow the, you know, conditioning or what you've learnt to just kick in when it wants to. And in a sense just meditate freely without control. Yeah. If you know what I mean. It's like if your mind wants to turn left, you let it turn left, and wants to turn right, you let it turn right. That kind of thing. And try not to get too involved. Be a passenger instead of a controller. Yeah. And just listen to Dhamma talks, come to the Tuesday night, you know, meditation classes. And you'll see over the years your way of thinking, you know, your emotions and things like that, they will slowly change because you know, what you see is what you become, kind of thing. Yeah. So hang around good people. That's my tip. My sage advice for tonight. Hang around good people. It's that simple. If you go to the pub and hang around the gangsters, what will happen to you? You end up in jail. You don't want to be there now, do you? Anyways. Any more questions? No? Yes, yes. Yeah? No? Okay. So usually what happens is what? Just start talking about stuff.
Is anybody any particular subject that I'd like Arjun to talk on?
Who's new to Buddhism, huh? Who's new to Buddhism?
Oh.
Like newbies. One, two, three. So you have no clue about Buddhism whatsoever? No? A little bit.
Just a good start of the year.
Yeah, just like Buddhism is okay. Buddhism. Whew. As you can see, I'm not like, I just live a life as a monk. I'm not really a big, you know, scholar or anything like that. So basically, Buddhism is a path that leads to the end of suffering. To put it in the kind of dry manner. So the understanding that the life that we live is, you know, there's pain, suffering, getting what we want is like a cause of like distress, or getting what we don't want also is a cause of, you know, suffering, and just this general sense of just being unhappy and unwell, mentally and physically. And basically the Buddha was a man who was just like us. He's not some sort of superhuman like God or angel or whatever. He was just a human being like us. And he renounced his family at the age of, I think, 29 to go and discover, you know, the meaning of life. And at the time in India, it was a time where you had a lot of like ascetics. I think like Hinduism was there in that time, I'm not too sure. But there was a lot of religion around, and there were monks as well. And the idea of a monk in those times was the monk has given up like the worldly life to live a life as a simple person in the forest, to work on his mind like through meditation, and to, you know, basically discover the meaning of life. And so the Buddha did that. He practiced for, I think, 9 years, no, 5 years or something like that, and studied with different teachers, and eventually just went out on his own and meditated deeply, you know, what we were doing earlier, just meditation, but very deep, very still. And through that meditation he, you know, understood the world for what it is, and came up with, you know, what the religion as you know today as Buddhism. Yeah, basically the training of the is the training of the mind. Put simply, training of the mind in a way where you want to develop the, you know, wholesome states of mind, you know, the goodness, the peace, the happiness, and the other part is to decrease or let go the negativity that you can have in one's mind, which is, you know, anger, jealousy, greed, you know, these things which we have, and we can see which is that are harmful to us, and also to purify the mind, which is basically the practice of meditation. And the meditation, as you did tonight, it was just like an on the surface type meditation, but if you practice longer, you go deeper, the mind becomes more quiet, it becomes powerful, and from there you get the insights, or, you know, the understandings into this world, that this world is, you know, suffering and is impermanent and non-self, which is, yeah, very hard for you to understand. You have to be a Buddhist for a while to understand the language and the idea of what it is. But basically, in my opinion, Buddhism is a training of the mind. And in a sense, when people look on, they think that it's a religion. And what's the meaning of a religion? A religion is, you know, when you look on as a person, you know, religion is about, you know, wearing a certain type of uniform, having your rites and rituals. So, you know, as a monk, you do the chanting, and you gather around and you sit in meditation. And in a sense, there's like a religious feel about it. And also, the idea of religion is to believe in a god, or, you know, like a god. And, you know, in my opinion, just living a life as a monk, the religious side of things that we get up to in our monastery is very little. Oh, you know, maybe like 3% of our time spent in the monastery is dedicated to like religious things. So, in a sense, can you really call that a religion? So the other time spent. In your day as a Buddhist is to train your mind, and that's the way I see it. Like, Buddhism is the path that one takes to train their minds to become, you know, better people, to become more peaceful, to become more calm, to become more happy. And a lot of times, you know, one of the things in the Buddhist teachings is that one way that people come across these Buddhist teachings is because they've experienced like turmoil or suffering, or like a sense of unhappiness in their lives, and they're looking for an answer, looking for something which can help them overcome their problems. And that is basically what, you know, we do as Buddhist monks and as Buddhists, is to just try to make our lives better in all aspects. And the teachings, they, you know, they go on, and there's the Eightfold Path and Four Foundations of Mindfulness and, you know, the Four Noble Truths, you know, the very technical side of Buddhism that you can read up on. You know, there's books online, there's a lot of stuff on the internet. But yeah, essentially, you know, it's basically working with your mind and your body, and just trying to create a better life for yourself. So it is, really. It's not difficult. Just living life awesomely. And then, you know, Buddhism's like, oh, you become enlightened. Enlightened. What is that? what does it feel like to become enlightened? I don't have a clue. And, you know, in a sense, this craving to become enlightened it creates like a blockage, and you know, there's like a discontent when we have this craving for what we don't know. And the best thing to do is just forget about it. Don't worry about what it feels like to be enlightened. Just worry about this moment and your attitude towards it. And And what I understand is that if you can take care of this moment and look after it, then enlightenment will come. You know, those deep insights will come. The deep meditation will come. And that's what I've been taught and been taught. So when I practice, I don't think about what's going to happen in the future. I just worry about what happens now. Yeah?
I think meditation is a lot about enlightenment.
Yeah? How?
I feel always like this. You just download a lot of things that you don't need and you get rid of things and you just enlighten yourself.
Sorry?
You just enlighten yourself, like you don't get burdens or whatever.
Oh, enlighten.
Yeah. Just unload things.
Yeah, yeah. That's a different meaning of enlightenment. Is that what I'm saying? Like awakening or realization?
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons people become, you know, monks, because they want to realize the truth. And in a sense, yes, this path is about letting go, about throwing things away, especially the things that things that burdens our minds. Yeah, so we just try to throw away whatever we can. Yeah. Let's just try to live free. And just try not to have a sticky mind. You know, a sticky mind which, when it sees something, it starts to think about it. And then when it goes home, it still thinks about it. So try to not have a sticky mind instead of having, like, a Teflon mind. You know, you see it. Yeah. Okay. The next thing. You don't need to think about it. It's just like, be carefree. You know, it's okay to be carefree. Yeah, you don't need to think too much. Well, you can think, but thinking is fine, but holding on to it, that's where the problem happens. Somebody says something unkind to you and you just keep it with you all day, all night, all week, all year. It's just terrible. Just see if you can let that go. You know, throw it away. Be free from those things. And that way, I think, if you can be free from those things, you can live more presently and enjoy what life has to offer. You know, you don't need to become a monk to be happy. You can be a lay person and be happy. It's just how you use your mind. And, you know, I can't find fault with, you know, the world that the people live in. There's the joys and happinesses that you get from the life that you live, you know, the family that you have, the holidays that you go on, the food that you eat, you know, those kinds of things. And I think that's perfectly fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But what I understand as being a monk, if you want to really enjoy those things, just try to have a mind which is free. You know, doesn't hold on to things, which isn't sticky. So in a sense, you can be more present when you're with your family. Can understand what they're going through. You can be, and that way you can be more receptive, and that way you can be more compassionate and see what they really need, and that you can help them that way. Yeah. Yes. In a sense, you know, meditation does help you as a monk and does help you as a lay person as well. And you know, Ajahn Brahm would say, like if you go on these retreats, and then when your mindfulness starts to get strong, then everything looks beautiful. Like the grass is a lot greener, life becomes more lively, the food tastes better, and it just all comes from the mind becoming more clearer and more open to the experiences that happen. You can see, you know, just observing human nature, you can see, you know, the people who just think too much, you know, they've always got something going on, and they don't really in tune with life, and because of that, they can't really enjoy themselves and experience what life has to offer, because they're always stuck in their head, in the future or in the past or some sort of concept or just worrying about something. Anyways. I would like to make an announcement. There's a weekend retreat this weekend at Jhana Grove. I think there's some seats left. And guess who's the teacher? me. So yeah, if you want to be tortured, then come along.
Any more questions?